hey, these guys, they're still working on getting these bolts tightened.
I'm Austin.
And I'm Cloud.
This is
Me Watch Me.
Today's movie is Apollo 11. Apollo 11 is a 2019 documentary film directed by Todd Douglas Miller. Starring history, I guess? And it seems weird, but we've never not asked the question, I guess. But how about a plot synopsis?
All right, so some dudes found some footage from NASA that no one's ever seen before and was like, hey, let's put together a movie. And then was like, hey, I got some really cool film that's never been used before. We need to build a prototype machine to process it. And then they did. And then they put it together. And then we found out that Buzz is pretty calm for a dude. And the astronaut's like making jokes.
And they went to the moon.
Yes, actually went to the moon, people.
Actually went to the moon. Yeah, so this is a documentary, which, yes, last year we did DocuCember. This year we had, like, one episode in December, maybe.
I think.
I guess Zodiac was within December.
I'm sorry, guys. 2019 was a bad year for everyone. Hopefully 2020 will be better. And so we're starting off the year with what we should have done last year.
Yeah.
But it's okay.
It's okay. Now, I say documentary because that's what everybody else says, but like really, it's more like a document than it is a documentary, because it's like, you know, typically you have a documentary and you have like
interviews and perceptions of events. Like, this is just footage that was
like the only thing like, that's not from the time is these diagrams we get now and then of like, this is the thing you're about to see them try to do.
But here there wasn't actual footage of it that you don't hear.
Which I feel like they're probably, if they... they could have kept it entirely contemporary because there must like they gave like speeches to like various groups here and there about like how everything was going to work, and the like science reporters on the networks did explain, you know, what was going on at various times while it was actually happening. Not as much for this one as they did when everything was going wrong on 13, because they had much more airtime to cover, because they were just trying to cover it wall to wall for 6 days, and so they had to have somebody say something. So it's like, let's have somebody hold up this model of the rocket and talk about what is supposed to happen, and like point at this, like hold up this piece of paper and say this to scale is like how much space they have to hit the orbit rider they'll skip off. And so there was less of it during 11, I suppose, but they do make them look like they're, you know, almost like vector graphic-y, like, you know, asteroids or something. You said that it made you think of Space Invaders, but
yeah,
it's not. It's a little like Space Invaders wasn't vector graphic, and so it doesn't look exactly the same.
Well, I'm just talking about like the little icon that they use for the stuff,
uh-huh,
like those, like how it kind of moves, and it's very simplistic.
Yeah,
you know.
Is it supposed to look like it could have been made at the time?
Yeah.
Because it's the only thing that wasn't, except for the music, except for that one song, which they used because they could hear it in some of the actual audio recordings. And so then they could just like barely pick it out, and which you hear the little bit of there. And it's when it's like spinning around away from the microphone. And so they used that, but the rest of the music, the actual score for it, they still, like the guy that wrote the music and performed the music, did it on like synthesizers that like existed at the time. So someone could have made this music at the time if they had wanted to. So everything is either literally from the time or as close to from that could have been from the time as we could. But like there's no narration, there are no interviews. Everything is just look at this stuff and listen to these people talking at the time.
Well, it kind of reminds me of like if you were to dig in your like your grandparents' attic and you found like a film roll. And you just kind of hooked up a projector and started playing it. Like, that's kind of the feeling I got from this, because it itself tells the events that happen, but it doesn't hold your hand through it. It merely shows you.
Look at this.
Exactly.
This is what happened. And you can either understand it or not, but we're not helping you. Except that they explain, you know, what translunar injection is and entry interface and that, but they just do it with like single words on the screen. And like we get this like countdown to various things at different times and like the velocity and which the it's when you this is the best representation that I've ever seen of it, because I've never seen the film that they use. And so it may be some of the no one's ever seen this, which is a good deal of it. It's not just the 70 millimeter, which we'll have to talk about specifically. But there's all kinds of stuff here that you just, cause if you look at, if you've seen documentaries about the space program in the '60s, or you've seen, just like the straight stuff that's available normally, there's only like, there's a few certain things that you always see, like of the launch and of the, them getting the suits on and of the descent and the moonwalk from the TV camera and the ring coming off of the stage separation, which I'll go ahead and deal with that and I'll get back to what I was leading to in a second. But that they do give us just a moment of that, because I guess it's not really Apollo if you don't see the ring fall off of the stage separation. But they do the opposite. From a camera that I've never seen the perspective of, or especially not for that long, that's from the stage that they separated from as it falls away. And it's like a minute of just that. And it, the effect that it had to me was, normally you see, because you see it from the other side, you see the ring fall off and then they ignite the stage and move away, that you're sort of with them. So it's like we're traveling with them. And so there's not like, sure, you see the Earth getting farther away, and then later you'll see the like Earth rise and realize that you're far away from the Earth, or that they're far away from the Earth. And but what doing it from the other side does is have this, they're leaving in a really impacting way that you don't normally get. You don't usually get the Earth side of it once they get out of sight from the really, really long lens during the actual launch, which I was disappointed that even with all this stuff that we've never seen, you never see that camera from the outside. And it's the one that when they're way, way up there, when you hear them say like 8 miles downrange and 10 miles altitude, like, and they're really, really, really far away, that lens is like 7 feet long and it's on this camera that's like way out there away from the pad so it can be stable. And normally the one that you see the sort of long range footage from, the like pan up, is the one that's on the like gun turret mount kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that's not that one.
Well, like we do get to see a little snippet of the turret.
Yeah. You do see it.
And it is just covered in cameras.
It is.
And my thing is, it's like, you know, I was like, I'm just picturing every single like news station having to like get like wait in line and be like, can you put my camera on your turret too?
Well, the TV camera, there is actually only one, and you can see a sign on it on the side in some of this footage where it says TV pool. because it's just like, we're only putting one. Everybody can run a cable. Like, we're not, you're putting a full television camera for all three networks on this thing. Like, you can share.
And yeah, you're going to share.
And, you know, it's not like, you know, when a politician speaks and there's 60 microphones on the lectern, and it's like, just and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they do go to a breakout box and everybody runs the XLR from it, and it really is just a couple of microphones. But
like, you get one.
But you don't have to bring your own. But that lens, like, we saw that lens. I don't know where it is now. It used to be in the Astronaut Hall of Fame Museum, that's like 2 miles away from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. But
is that the one that we saw?
Yeah, the really long
thing was
one.
Huge.
Yeah, that's the lens that's that really far downrange stuff. And I've never been able to find a picture or film that's just like available to the public of it in use at the time. And I guess because it's kind of over there by itself and nobody's really looking at it, but all you ever see is the footage from its perspective. You never see it. But I don't know where it is now, because that isn't there anymore. That they closed that and moved the stuff to various places. So the Astronaut Hall of Fame doesn't exist anymore. And so I don't know if they moved that over to the actual Space Center, or if it's in storage, or where it is, because we haven't been back there in a number of years. And that was where it was the last time we were there to see where any of it was. But I'm sure it's somewhere because it's important and historical, but I don't know if it's like available to see, and I can't like directly recommend like, go check out this lens because it's a real big lens and it's neat, because I don't know where you can see it. But the when they're on the descent, they do it from one camera that's not the one you normally see. Normally you see the like TV one, the black and white one. And this is color. And I think it's like slow scan or something. It's not full frame rate. But it's there. It's one shot. It's the whole time. They put the velocity, like the altitude and the fuel left, like the fuel time left on the screen. And they just do it, like, once they separate from the command module, you're in this one camera, and it's just this. It's like the it's like the opposite of the launch, where it's like the waiting for them to come back into signal acquisition during reentry at the end of Apollo 13. It's just this, like, it's so, like, even though you know what happens, it's constructed in such a way, I guess, because it's not constructed at all. It's just like, here it is. Here's what happens. And like, the only thing they could, I think, to have added to it at all would have been if they put their heart rates on it, because they talk about them afterwards. And yeah, they're like, Neil's heart rate was like 158 or something. And it's like, yeah, it is.
I mean, they're going through exciting stuff. And Buzz is literally at 88.
Yeah, well, actually, right then they don't know, because his sensors aren't working.
Oh, that's
so
right.
Say, we don't know about Buzz. We don't have his information.
We told him to check those electrodes, and he said that he took them off and put them back on, but we're not getting a medical reading.
Yeah, well, and while we're there, because there is that, as far as anyone can tell, the most non-historical thing that they do is they move that like to earlier in the timeline. They move it into like lunar approach, when it actually happened on the way back from the moon on day 8. So they move it there into the beginning to just for it to be dramatic, but it did happen. It just didn't happen exactly at that point, which is an unusual choice, kind of, because otherwise they're so careful about the time that things happened, and they have the like, the countdown to this or that, and all of the like Capcom transmissions are like synced to the actual time, and they have like the film of them like saying it sometimes, which normally you don't get to see. Like, you see like random footage of the control room, and then you hear Capcom stuff, and normally you don't get to see them together. Apparently that was a big part of the actual producing this thing, was just, here is 11,000 hours of audio. It is like we know kind of the day that it was from because it's probably written on the box on the outside of the tapes, but figure it, like, we just don't know because it was just all recorded because they recorded everything along with the telemetry and in case something happened so they could go back and work the problem. But just there's, you know, every moment of the time during the mission, there are 30 tracks of audio being recorded. And so there's just, it's so much to go through and try to figure out when did this happen? When, look at the flight plan, look at other documents, find out when would they have said this? Can we find film where we can see a clock? Like it took a year to make this thing just because.
Well, yeah, like getting everything organized.
Get everything organized and put it all together and scan the film and be really careful with the film.
Thing to see, like, everyone just watching, like, the one guy try to put it on the machine and like, he has to, like, slowly insert it and everyone's shaking, sweating really hard. And he's just like, stop, guys, you're making me nervous.
Yeah, like, it must have been, like, there's a disappointingly brief and singular featurette on the Blu-ray for this where they talk about the film and putting the film together and discovering the film and scanning the film and having to build the machine to scan the film. And I think they underplay it a little bit, what it must have been like actually doing. Like, he says, like, it was terrifying, but, like, it seems like just doing that, just, like, putting the film in the machine and running it the first time is like, probably as anxiety making as landing on the moon with 15 seconds of fuel. Like, can we find a place to touch down? We don't know. We're running out of fuel. And it's just like, just it's running. Is it going to tear? Is it going to rip a sprocket hole? Like,
because if you destroy that tape and someone finds out about it, they'll probably kill you.
It's just, I mean, you would feel terrible anyway, just because it's like, this is like literal physical history. Like, this is the only piece, like the only copy of this film. We didn't even know we had it. Now we do. We've got to preserve it somehow.
That's like holding the Declaration of Independence and like tripping and falling and like it falling in like a mud puddle.
Yeah. It's just like, you want to be so careful. Which, about the slow scan, you know, much hay has been made about how they lost the original slow scan tape, or they didn't lose them. They were recorded over because tapes were expensive and they didn't realize. And it was, you know, that it didn't realize until years later that it was gone. And, you know, of course, some people think like that's so that we could keep it secret that there were transformers there or that we didn't actually go. And so it's to cover. We can't have the high quality stuff for people to examine because then you'd be able to see that it wasn't real. So we have to keep it this like grainy secondhand recording of the TV broadcast. But what one of the things that was neat is while they do show us some of that, they don't show like a lot of it. And when they are, it's always in like a multi-box on the screen and there's something else happening too. And they use a lot more photography and that camera that's in the window in the capsule, the like one frame a second camera. But what you can see sometimes is they'll have film of inside Mission Control when the TV broadcast is on the big projection screen. And that's the direct feed coming in. And you can see what it would have looked like if we had that. The like uh-huh. really clear stuff compared to when, and sometimes it's in a multi-box together. It's the film of the control room with it on the projection screen, and in the box next to it is the actual is the what we have of the TV broadcast, the terrible grainy like secondhand recording of it.
I also kind of enjoy that whenever we are in Mission Command and we have like the footage, like you can tell it's someone holding a camera because there'll be times where we'll get multiple angles and you can actually see.
Yeah, you can
the
see other
guy
people
holding
with other
the camera.
Cameras. Yeah.
And people are just trying not to stare at them. Yeah, it's nice.
Well, and that it was neat because sometimes you don't see that other camera, the footage from that other camera, because that's the one that we normally see. And so, like, you can, if you've watched enough of it and, like, you kind of remember what footage we've seen before, you can kind of remember, like, oh, I remember there's an angle of the control room from over there where we can see that guy standing with the camera. I didn't know this camera was over here. Mm-hmm. Never seen this before. And so just the having the multiple.
They were letting him run a camera.
But the 65 millimeter is so amazing. Like, it's so clear. It's so sharp. The color in it is, and it's especially noticeable because it's contrasted with a lot of other different types of footage throughout the rest of it. And sometimes like back to back shots, because this is the only thing we have of this. But just, and to not know that we had this for 50 years or 49 years, I guess, when they actually, because what happened was it was suggested to Todd Douglas Miller that, because he made a documentary about Apollo 17, which is the last lunar landing, or at least the last one without rock aliens attacking. And it was suggested to him that because the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11 was coming up, that maybe he should make a movie about that. And then CNN, the films department of CNN, said, okay, we'll pay for that. And so he just went to the archives to look and see what there was. And so they just started digging through stuff that nobody had looked at in the National Archives, and just seeing what was there, and just started pulling out these film cans of like, what is 65 mm? What? We didn't know about this. And just no one had ever looked at it since the time. And then like that was the like, oh, so this is the centerpiece of this. Now we're, because, you know, there's been lots of documentaries, and especially documentary TV series, and you know, fictionalized versions and all kinds of things about the Apollo program, and in particular Apollo 11. And so like, you, sure, it would be the 50th anniversary, but like, we've kind of seen most of the footage, you know. Of course, you know, there's hundreds of hours of footage anyway that's not the shots that are normally used, but there's not usually much going on.
And that's what you would think until sharp-dressed man started playing, and then he just walks out with this canister that says, "You've never seen shit like this before, fam."
Yeah.
And everybody was like, "What's that?" And he goes, "Did you not read the thing on the canister? It says shit that you've never seen before, fam." And they're like, "Okay, well then what is this?" And he goes, "It's 65 millimeter stuff that no one's ever seen before, and it's amazing." So of course we had to have it.
Yeah, and like he describes in that unfortunately brief featurette, that just like putting it up on the screen the first time and just being like, whoa.
Yeah, it is whoa.
Which is just like, which is what it absolutely would be like. And it's what it's like when you see it here in the movie. But it, you know, just, we know it's, I mean, we don't know what it's going to look like, but we know it's coming. We've been told that there's 70 millimeter footage that we've never seen before. And then you see it and you're like, whoa. And, but just like seeing, we don't know what this looks like. You know, we kind of pull the film out of the can, look at a few frames, like, yeah, it's a film of a some space something. But then you've actually loaded up and run it. And it's just like, no one's seen this for 50 years. You know, it's like, you know, opening a pyramid tomb or something. And it's just like, wow, look at this. This
well,
is really
like,
great.
Not only is it, you know, the fact that no one has seen it for 50 years is one thing, but the other side of this is the people who filmed it did an amazing job simply filming it.
They absolutely did.
And it was so good that as I was watching it, because I forgot that this was, you know, like, here is nothing but the footage, and we didn't really do anything to add to it. It's just the footage. And then I'm sitting here and it is like movie quality footage. And I'm like, wait a minute. Is this the so-so? And you had to actually tell me like, no, they only used footage like that was taken during the time. And I'm like, that's really good.
Yeah, because it is shot like you knew you were shooting a movie. Which I wonder if there's like some lost history of, we were making a documentary at the time that just never got finished or something. Cause like, why did they shoot this? What was it for?
Yeah.
Why did we shoot 40 minutes of 70 millimeter footage? I'm assuming it's for, he said they found two reels, which I guess maybe that's what's, I don't know if it was edited already from just what was usable or if it's just straight out of the cameras or what. And typically a reel is 20 minutes. Although in the case of a 70 millimeter reel, it's a big reel. But they shot, you know, two reels, at least what survived of 65 millimeter footage. He says 10 perf 65, which is just great. Like, there's nothing else like that. He says it was used for engineering, which was true, but like, you never, you know, most, like, the biggest 70 millimeter, like, full scope IMAX, like what the Tarantino and Nolan pulled out for Hateful Eight and Dunkirk, where they're just like, we're going to take these lenses that they haven't used since the 60s and we're going to shoot this as big as possible on the biggest possible film, and we're going to use the real 70 millimeter anamorphic lenses. And like, that's 8 perf, which, if you don't know what, like, on film, you see the it's run through the projector with sprockets that hook into these holes in the side. The sprocket holes are called perforations, and it's abbreviated to perf. And film is measured by the number of perforations that a single frame occupies. And so, like, normal 35 millimeter film is like 4 perforations. And if it's shot anamorphic, then it's squished into basically square, even though it's going to be like 3 times, you know, 2.3 times as wide as that when it's stretched back out with the lenses. But it's only 4 perforations tall. And so this is over twice as tall as that. And it's also like 3 times as wide. Because it's 65 millimeter, you know, large format 65 millimeter scope. So it wasn't shot as IMAX. So it's like crazy wide film. And why? What was it for? They shot this and then it got put into the archives and no one ever saw it again. No one ever talked about it again. They didn't remember that it was even there. You know, I'm sure in the, like, the National Archives is an archive, and so they typically know that what they have, like, in theory, there's a piece of paper somewhere that says, like, this is what is in this box. And so I suppose they knew at one time, you know, two cans 70 millimeter, you know, July 1969 Kennedy Space Center complex, you know, they knew that, I suppose. Unless you go and look at that piece of paper and remember that it's there, then it's just sitting there and you don't know. So it's not like it poofed into existence when they happened to start, you know, it's not like somebody's closet where they just realize, oh, I was at the Kennedy assassination, or my grandfather was at the Kennedy assassination and he had this like 8 millimeter camera and just no one ever knew, and he forgot, and it was just in this, you know, on a reel in his closet. Like, it's not like that where it's absolutely undiscovered, but what was it for? Why did they shoot it and then never use it for anything?
Well, I would venture a guess that it was pre-American propaganda for the space shuttle launch to be used against the Russians.
The space shuttle?
yeah, essentially. It's like, hey, look at what we're doing. We're going to land on the moon with this. Ha ha, screw you, Russia. And then I'm sure they just hit a point where it was going to cost them too much money, and they realized that everybody else was doing something similar. So it's just like, why, as the government, are we spending money doing this when all these other organizations and the news are going to do it for us without us having to pay for it? And so it's just like, well, we got some of this, but I guess we don't need it. So they just put it away.
I guess. I mean, something happened because they put it away and never took it out again. And we've had big anniversaries before. You know, we had the 40th anniversary, which was a big deal. And just it never came. And with all of the, like, digging around and everything that existed to find the original slow scan tapes from the TV broadcast, which is not really a search. What they're really looking for is if anybody has, like, one of the dupe copies over the TV signal from, like, when it was like rebroadcast to, so that it could get to, like, everywhere around the world. Like, that's what we're looking for, really. Like, did the BBC happen to keep their tapes, which of course they didn't, because they don't even have the first 10 years of Doctor Who, because they taped over the tapes too. But so that we're not going to find it there. And there are little bits and pieces here or there from, I think, maybe Australia and a couple of the places. I think we talked some about this on the Dish episode, and I can't remember the details now. Go back and listen to the Dish episode.
It was also a pretty good episode.
Also watch the Dish because it's good. So, you actually see the Dish at least once. I think you see another radio telescope array too, but you do. I think one of them is actually the Dish, from the Dish, the Australia Dish. But even if you don't, it's there because you see the TV broadcast from the moonwalk, and that's coming from the Dish. So, and it was upside down because it was coming from the Dish. So,
you know, as dumb as this is, I'm hearing like the theme song, just some good old boys, not meaning any harm, but it's like replace boys with Australians. And then it's just a couple of Australian dudes trying to get the Dish to transmit the signal because, oh my God, they're going under the moon. And why isn't this working? And we're working with NASA. This is so important. Don't screw it up. I don't know why my brain does stupid stuff.
So that, I mean, commonly folk music is kind of like, wait, what did you say? But like this song, which is called Mother Country by John Stewart, not that one. I have no idea what he's talking about. He just goes from like thing to thing to thing. And it's like, what? I don't know what you mean. I don't know if you know what you mean, but for sure, I don't know what you mean. And I really like that. We realize that it's coming from the tape player on the capsule that we didn't know, because like we see it kind of floating around there in some of the footage, but we don't know that that's what the sound is. And then just the actual like full sound of the song goes away, and then we hear the actual recording of it just like, you know, like Doppler affecting, just spinning around and in just terrible quality over the radio.
Well, see, like it starts off with that. And so it's like, here's this thing that kind of sounds like music, but it sounds horrible. And you can see it spinning as it gets closer to the actual camera lens.
Yeah.
And then they cut away from that. And then the music starts and it's actually the song. And then I'm like, okay. And I didn't even know the two were related until they cut back to it. Back. And I'm like, oh, so that's what they were playing. God, that doesn't sound that good.
No.
What is this song? Like, let me put it to you like this. An Ogie from Muskogee made more sense to me as a child than this song does now as an adult.
Yeah,
that's sorry, guys.
I mean, at least there I understand he's telling us that he's from Oklahoma. Like, I get that. You're from Oklahoma. I don't know what John Stewart is talking about.
It's happening. Wrong John Stewart.
Wrong John Stewart. Yeah,
it's not happening.
Common name problems. Something else that was really neat that I'd never seen is there's a lot of the like closed circuit, like, you know, security camera type stuff of particularly the launch pad and I think the suit up room. They're just like, I'd never seen that stuff either. And it's just like, it adds a lot to that. Like, this is like happening at this particular time and we're just looking at it happen.
Well, something else, it adds to the mood, because a lot of the times when we see the footage, if it doesn't have anything happening or going on in it, then we never get to see it. Mm-hmm. Like every time we've previously watched footage, it was to progress something actively. But whenever we like, it's just a camera looking out into the distance, seeing nothing but what's out there in the distance. It's like we're setting a mood for what's about to happen. And then every so often we'll like get like some like video clips of some of the people who are lining up to watch the launch. And then it'll kind of pause and then go back to viewing nothing. And then you'll see like the how many hours until countdown. And it's like 30 hours and nothing's happening. And now we're outside of the building looking at nothing but the outside of a building. It's just like it does a great job setting the mood prior to when the cool stuff actually happens.
Yeah, it gives us like a lot of time passed between the big moments that you normally watch happen and that are the ones that are talked about, except for we don't get anything at all for like the end of day one through like the beginning of day four. It's just like they make the translunar injection burn, and then there's like a couple more moments that happen, and then day four. And like there's nothing, like nothing happened for 3 days that was worth showing us, or that we, I guess we had footage of, maybe because they didn't do a TV broadcast.
And well, what happened during those few days? Nothing. We just played Old Maid.
Yeah, it's just there's just nothing. Nothing happened. You know, of course, that on Apollo 13 is when everything happened, because that's when it exploded. And then things, now we have to figure out how to not die. You know, that's on like day three or four when that happens. And so well, there just nothing happened.
I think that's a problem that mankind has been trying to face for several thousands of years, trying not to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
This one just happened to be almost in space.
Well, and there is like, that's the, you get a little bit of a moment of it in the first episode of From the Earth to the Moon, the HBO miniseries from 95.
It's a good miniseries. Go watch it.
It's a good miniseries. Go and watch it.
Anything made by Tom Hanks where it's like World War II or space, go watch it. It's good.
But you see the dad from Wonder Years being like, they're listening to the Kennedy give the speech. And like the thing that he says, which is becomes the title of that episode, is "Can we do this?" And it is like that the biggest thing that he did to just like screw all the engineers was and return him safely to the Earth. Like that was the thing. It's like, sure, we could put a man on the moon. Get him back? That's a little more difficult. And like, so, and that was sort of the difference between our space program and Russia's space program, where they were just like, yeah, send the dog into space.
The dog's in space.
Yeah. Okay. Which
we had to send. Essentially, we had to send people into space with a slingshot while equipping them with a slingshot. So once they were in space, they could use a space slingshot to slingshot themselves back.
Yeah.
So and we're having to like make multiple slingshots to all do different jobs that slingshots don't do. So one slingshot can do its job.
It's a whole extra layer of problems that you have to solve. Like, get back. And not even just get back, because like we could probably go up and, you know, orbit around the moon and come back. Like, that's not a big deal. But like, get somebody to the ground
and stop.
Stop on the ground without dying, and then lift back up off the ground and then get back somehow. Well, you can't lift off the moon with it. We can't send a second Saturn V to the moon. So although it would have to be like a 1/6 size Saturn V anyway. So but we can't do that. We can't get straight back from the moon. So that means we're going to have to like leave something in orbit that we can then dock to. Can we dock to something that's orbiting around the moon that then can get us back? And so it's just like this whole set of and that's why it took until 11, because it's like we have to do all of these things in steps. We have to get into space. We have to stay in space for as long as we'll be in space on the way to the moon and back. We have to separate off from each other. We have to rendezvous back. We have to make sure that we can get back into the atmosphere. We have to, after all this is just, it's so many more problems to get back. And which is the thing that bothers me so much about the theoretical, like, non-government Mars missions that are happening or that are supposedly being planned. I don't think anybody is going to actually do it, because I don't think they really have the right idea. But that, like, so much of what's being said, the only thing that anybody is saying is that it's one way. You're going to go to Mars, you're going to set up a base there, and then you're going to stay. And that doesn't feel right. Like, it feels like we should be able to get to Mars and then come back. And if we can't do that, then we shouldn't go yet until we figure it out. And I think we can. Like, it's a harder problem than the moon because it's a lot farther away and there's more gravity and there's atmosphere and it takes so much longer. So it's the same problems, but they're just bigger size versions of those problems, just because there's extra elements that Mars has that the moon doesn't. But that, I think, should still be the goal. You know, Kennedy, we need a Kennedy to say we're going to land a man on Mars and return him safely to the Earth, and then, I guess, have them get killed, because otherwise we probably will. Like, if Kennedy was alive, we probably wouldn't have done it in time, because the him saying we're going to do this and then he died made this, like, we made a promise to Kennedy while he was alive that we could do this, and so we have to do it, and so we'll do whatever we have to do it in time. You know, before that was the other thing. There was two things. He said, and return him safely to the Earth, and before this decade is out. So it's like, okay, so we've got 8 years, almost 7 years, and we've put a guy into space, like, once before. So we've got a very short, and like, there's been like two other people in space before, like in the whole history of the world. So there's, we don't know how to do this. And we have 7 years to do it in. And then Kennedy went and got himself shot. And so we can't ask him to take it back. And so we have to do it. And so we did. And that's, I think, the reason we haven't been to Mars, or we haven't been back to the moon, is that there's no, you know, there's no hurry. You know, we'll get to it. We don't even have something to replace the space shuttle. They were like, we're going to replace the space shuttle. And then time passed and passed and passed. And they was like, well, we've got to retire the space shuttle. We haven't replaced it yet, but I guess we'll just have to ride with the Russians, because we didn't replace it in time. And we still haven't replaced it, and it's been 10 years since they retired the thing. And this year will be 10 years. Because there's no deadline, there's no time limit, and there we had a time limit, we had to do it, and we barely, you know, we made it by slightly less than 6 months, but
we still did it.
But we did it, and the way that we did it, with the, like, because, you know, of course it was, you know, sort of, you know, it was paid for mostly by the, you know, the U.S. government, which thereby means U.S. tax money, and you know, operated from the U.S., but people in many other countries and people in this country from many other countries, you know, the best people that we could find that Russia didn't already have, and mostly a lot of people that we stole from Germany after the war.
Dang it! That's what I was going to make a joke about!
That it really did take, you know, there's an American flag painted on the side of the thing, and we stuck a flag in the ground on the moon. But the thing about it, and they spend some time with it here, and I really appreciated that, is that the, even though there's a flag, you know, 20 feet that way, the actual, the plaque with words on it that we left said, "Here, men from Earth, and for all mankind," and there's no mention of any particular place or country or anything. It doesn't say "here, men from America first set foot on the moon." It says "here, men from Earth first set foot on the moon." And, you know, peace and stuff. And so, like, that there, while it was a, let's show the Russians that we can do that, we're better than them. There was also just like, we should do this for, like, you know, the Earth and stuff, because it would be cool, and because it would, you know, Kennedy said, not because they are easy, but because they are hard, and, like, there is this, like, we just have to, and you have to say that, you can't say because they're hard, you have to say because they are hot, like, you have to say the Kennedy Massachusetts are, and it really, once you're actually doing it, it was just like, we have to do this, you know, where, you know, I'm over here doing trigonometry and I'm over here trying to get these bolts on this valve tightened.
Oh my god, the stupid bolts.
And it was just like, we just do it, we have, you know, never mind, you know, Russia or whatever, like, we just have to do this because we're in the middle of it now, you know, we're in the submarine. But yeah, that's something that shows you so much about the difference, even though we already had Apollo 1 and we, the, at that point lost the only three people that had died as a result of attempting to go to space, although not in space, which still hasn't happened. That it's like 3 hours until the launch. The crew is climbing through the hatch and those guys are still like 200 feet down below them trying to get these bolts tightened. And so it's just like, we're not sure if it's going to be ready, but the clock is running and we're just going to go ahead and sit down inside anyway and just expect that we're going to make it work.
You know, I honestly don't think they were screwing around with bolts. I'm just going to tell you now. I'm pretty sure the situation was a couple of engineer dudes being like, hey, we got to work on this. And there's this dude over here who's asking us these questions about what we're doing and how long it's going to take. And he doesn't know what we're saying because we got like these weird capacitors and other insert sciencey space shit. And it's just like, oh, the valve and some bolts. And we're just trying to get this screwed. And it's just like, hey, these guys, they're still working on getting these bolts tightened. And we're not even looking at bolts. It takes 20 minutes to tighten some bolts. There'd be like, it's just like a wall of bolts. And you have like the smallest.
Yeah. Well, I thought of the, there was a station bumper for Cartoon Network in the like, you know, first generation Cartoon Network. That had like it was just like, you know, 15 seconds or 30 seconds. I can't remember how long a bumper it was. And it's just Dexter
tightening
from Dexter's lab.
Tightening,
and he's got a bolt or he's got a wrench and a nut. And it's just on this box. And that's the only thing that's there is it's a box that contains the bolt that this nut tightens onto. And he's just ratcheting the wrench on it. And he just ratchets and ratchets and ratchets. And like just nothing ever happens. Yeah, and like the narration no to the end says, you know, eventually he's got to over tighten that. Just the old Cartoon Network voice says. And it's like, that's what I thought of. Just like wrench, 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 wrench. And just never getting tight. Which at the time, like his like magic, what looks like a wrench, but is actually makes a ratchety sound thing was yeah. Like, what is this thing? You know, now we have those. Now yes. You have just ratcheting box in wrenches and spanners, I guess they're called. But it's just it seemed like such a goofball thing at the time. Like, why does it look like a wrench, but it makes a ratchety sound? And I think it's just an animation thing, like having him like pick it up and put it back to change position on it is just more animation than just repeating. A single thing.
Speaking of Cartoon Network jokes and animation, Space Ghost, Coast to Coast, there was a clip where Thorax was like moving his arm and he's like, this is costing Cartoon Network an extra $40. And then he punches himself in the face. He's like, hey, I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good for a little self-aware. Space.
Yeah.
Space pirates,
implying that they are stealing space.
Yeah, yeah, because you don't say ocean pirates. You know,
they're just pirates.
You just have pirates. So
unless
like space
like
pirates,
Somalian
are,
pirates, and you know.
Somalian. Yeah. I mean, I guess you know pirates are Somalian pirates. You know, they're kind of trying to steal that money there.
Look at me.
These
you have Ebola now.
Objects of value.
And now, pigs in space.
So the only two jingles I have that have someone saying space in them. So I'm just there. They are. We'll get those out of the way. I mean, I guess. You know,
but science has proven that this is so.
Science has proven that this is so. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess there's also
treasure planet.
Like that's space adjacent. But yeah, I mean, there's so much math happening all the time. Like in almost all the footage, like if you're looking at mission control, like some guy is like leaning down, penciling something or like turned around to the back of the console behind him and like doing math on giant pieces of graph paper. And there's just math happening all the time. OK, here it is.
Science has proved that this is so.
Just so no one's disappointed. Got notes?
Nah. Nah. This is one of those things where I felt like notes would have been unnecessary. Because I wouldn't have taken notes on the events that we've seen as much as it is the events that were recorded.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because the events are the events, you know, things happened and.
Yeah, like we already know what happens. We've already seen it before, but it's just like, here's this extra stuff that you didn't see.
As you've never seen it before.
While someone puts their underwear on backwards and then complains about it not fitting correctly. But then I have seen that, so I can't have not seen it before. A conundrum, if you will.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
If you don't understand why that was appropriate there.
Yeah.
Guy puts on frozen underwear in the moment before in that commercial, and that's what it's kind of like. So, underwear, Jason.
I've done that.
I absolutely did it after that commercial.
I've put my underwear in the freezer before.
Yeah. Is it kind of like that?
Yeah, not really.
So, like, I mean, the thing is here is that, like, sure, you know, this things happened and here's, you know, how is that for your found footage? You know, like, this is like the most found footage a thing can possibly be. It's just like, here, we found this
real found footage
and we put it together here. So, and that's all we did was just put it together. But the way it's put together, like, it's so perfectly paced and like the stuff you were talking about where it's just like, let's watch nothing at all happen so that then when something does happen, then it means something. And although one of the other things that one of those times did was they show us the gantry to the door of the capsule retracts at like, you know, minus 30 minutes or something. And it retracts. And then it just kind of sits there and just like kind of bounces a little bit because there was, you know, force behind it retracting. But then once it's out of the way, like we didn't bother to put like, we're not going to lock it down. Like we just need it out of the way. And so we just put these motors on it and it pulls back and then it just kind of bounces.
Just sways in place, you know,
there and sways. And it's also, you know, 500 feet up. And so I'm sure there's a little bit of wind and it's probably moving around. But just like that, seeing that just like how, you know, Kennedy in the Rice University speech, which is the one you usually hear. That's the we choose to go to the moon. Like that's the yelling one. He doesn't do that in the speech to Congress. The and return him safely to the earth. Like that's from the Congress address. But most of what you think of when you like what you hear as the Kennedy moon speech is the Rice University one where he's like standing in front of the, you know, they just did the rocket tests and. You know, he makes a crack in it about how like the heat of reentry is like half as hot as the sun is, which is almost as hot as it is out here today. Because, you know, they're standing outside in the summer in Texas. And
hey, you got to get a jab in out there.
Gets a laugh about that. And then you see they actually show us a little bit of the film from it. We mostly just hear it, but they show us just right at the end. We kind of get this like seeing Kennedy give a Kennedy smile and behind him. One of the guys listening to the speech takes a handkerchief and like wipes his face with it. And so it's just like, oh, it's hot out there. And like, I kind of wonder about like that guy where he was just like, I can't not wipe my face. You know, because when you watch like the State of the Union address or something and, you know, all of the major Congress people are there, you know, the speaker and the vice president and everything are there behind the president and they just have to sit there and not do anything distracting for however long the speech is. And, you know, usually like Nancy Pelosi, like gets an itch in her nose and makes a weird face or, you know, the Joe Biden like claps at inappropriate times or something. So there are it's always awkward and it's an impossible thing to do to not be the thing that people are looking at because like, you know, you're sitting there, you're looking at the president and, you know, he looks the same as he did a minute ago. And really, you're just listening to him talk. And so you kind of start to look around. And for some reason, it's framed in such a way that you can see other people besides him. And so you just get distracted by the other people, and they just have to sit there and try as hard as they can not to be distracting, but also appear interested in what's being said. And just like all of these people here behind Kennedy, and this guy was just like, this sweat on my forehead, I've got to wipe it off. And he waited until after he stopped speaking, but like the camera is still on, and so we still get to see it. But he says, he's got this long list of things, you know, the way that a Kennedy speech is constructed, where it's just like this metaphor and this metaphor and this metaphor, and it just builds and builds and builds. And he says, you know, equipment put together with the precision of the finest watch. And so like, that's true. You know, there's how, you know, whatever, some large number, you know, million something part moving parts in a Saturn V, and it's, you know, this giant thing, and there's all of this other, you know, the mission control consoles and the computers and the people doing math, and you know, everything is, you know, the suits have to seal and all of these things that have to be just so. But we were still doing this in the late 60s, and we were doing it in a short period of time, and it was everything was like just barely over just good enough. Like everything was good enough, like it would do the job, but it was like just barely so, you know, like the problem of the limb, which there's an entire episode about in From the Earth to the Moon.
Your passing grade is a 70 at minimum. You made a 71.
You made a 71. It's just like, can we use just like four layers of foil? Like, will that work? Like, it's only going to be like, there's not going to be any air. It, you know, there's no wind. It's 1/6 gravity. We're never going to use it on the Earth. Can we just use just a few layers of foil instead of putting like a plate there? Yep. And like the whole, you know, some guy does some math on it with a pencil quickly and says, yep. And like, that's how everything was. It was like, just, we just have to get it. Just, can we get it to work? And just that little, the thing just kind of just bounces there. It's just like, it worked.
It worked. It did like, its job.
It did its job.
It did its job.
It stuck out there. They walked across it into the capsule. It retracted out of the way. It worked. But it just kind of bounces there. And just like, it's this stupid tiny thing, but it just had so much of an effect on me, as you could tell by me now, like,
finally getting
for,
to
like,
the point of it.
10
yeah.
minutes. But, well, no, like, I had to go through all of that to get there.
Just like a fine
the
watch.
The speech and everything. with the precision of the finest watch. Somewhere, like, watch is hard to do in a Kennedy accent, unless you actually have the accent. Because, like, you know, it's easy to say, it's easy to say hard, because, like, that is such a particular pronunciation of a sound, and you can apply it to other words that have the sound in it. But, like, just other words, it's hard to do, because it's not as distinct a difference from other accents. But just, like, it's so, everything is just so, but everything is just so, and it'll work.
I did like the shots we have, like the super up close shots of whenever they finally started ignition for liftoff.
Yeah, I've never seen.
I've like never seen, like, I think it was like only one that I remember seeing, and everything else was new, because that's something that I like, is experiencing something that is of such a high energy output of some kind that it is almost impossible to fathom without, like, literally breaking it down to like the smallest numbers. And so here you are watching this rocket, and you can't imagine just how large it is, because you can only see portions of it at a time. And if you were to see the whole thing, you're so far away from it that you don't have proper perspective. Yet. And here's this camera that's only looking at this tiniest portion of it, and you don't see anything except for it slightly moving up, and you can feel heat even though you're not there.
Yeah.
And it slowly rises, and it is nothing but like liquid sun falling out of it, pushing it upwards.
Yeah.
And like, that is something that I really enjoy watching.
Yeah. They did a really good job with mixing the sound of the launch too. Yeah. Where, like, it's really, you know, things were rattling in the theater that I didn't know were rattly that I'm going to have to track down and double-sided tape to the wall so they don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's really, which, you know, is nothing approaching what it actually is like. You know,
you'd probably wet yourself and not realize you wet yourself because you're vibrating so hard.
The people stand, like, the closest people are standing. When you see the people in the grandstands, like, they're 15 miles away.
Yeah.
Like, then, you know, you know, there's a few things that are a little closer, but, like, people are really far away, and it's still, like, you remember when they blew up the cement mixer on Mythbusters?
Yeah.
And they're standing, like, super far away from it, and, like, they stand there, and, like, you see it, and everybody kind of stands there, and they've just seen it explode, or basically just cease to exist, because it's the weirdest explosion that they ever did. And then, like, everybody gets, like, jolted back, because then, you know, several seconds later, the sound and the pressure wave finally gets over there because they were so far away.
And like, yeah,
like, that's what a rocket launch is like that. Like, you see it and you're like, wow. And then, like, several seconds later, now, like, a car is sitting on your chest and like, you didn't realize.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Mythbusters thing, because, like, that is another one of those situations where it's like you can't possibly fathom it until you experience it. But even just sitting there watching it is still so impactful.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, that's another one of those moments.
I mean, we've seen what, you know, how big the thing actually is.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's the one that's laying there on the ground at the Space Center. And it's really big.
It is big.
It's big. Of course, all of them are big. You're like, oh, that's, you know, that's the one from, you know, Mercury. And it's, you know, when you see them, like, side by side in a diagram or in a model or something, it's just like, oh, this, you know, this one is, like, tiny. And then the Saturn V is, like, real, real big. And it's like, you know, that's still pretty big.
Yeah.
You know, the little one is big, but then the big one is big.
It reminds me of, like, aligning, like, planets together size comparison wise. Yeah, like, it's like that.
It's like that.
Like, here's the Earth. Here's Jupiter.
Yeah.
Here is the Sun. You are the Earth.
Yeah.
There's Big Chungus over there.
I should say, also, while we're mentioning things that we saw at the place, you can go and walk across the gantry that just, like, sat there and, you know, bobbed slightly 500 feet up. Like, they have it on the, it's not attached to 39A anymore. It's sitting out there on the ground in the, you know, alongside the rocket garden, as it's called. And so you can go out and walk across it, and which I have while we were there. Which you didn't care about at all, but, like, you understood that it mattered to me, and you put up with me doing it. And it is really neat. I mean, if you watch the some of the making of stuff for Apollo 13, Tom Hanks talks about, like, shooting that scene for the movie where they walk across the gantry, and he says, like, he felt like a priest performing a mass. Like, it was, like, so important to him to be, like, in the full pressure suit and, you know, carrying the backpack and walking across the gantry into the, you know, with the capsule over there. And he said it was just, like, this is just fundamentally important thing to him, because, you know, space and the especially the Apollo and earlier era programs matter to him so much, you know, the way that they do to us. And it was important to him, and it was important to me too. And we still, at some point, we have to go back and actually, like, take the bus tour out around to the pads in the vehicle assembly building, because vehicle assembly building, it's my favorite building on Earth. It's a vehicle assembly building,
a building so large it has its own weather system inside of it.
You know, like, I've, you know, seen it from, you know, way over there, but I've never been close to it. And I would really like to, because I don't know why. I don't know what it is about it. I think maybe it is just because it's so important to the space program. And it's just kind of a neat looking building, because it's so tall, but it's so, like, it doesn't look like it. because it's so big in like every direction.
It's also so square.
It's so square, yeah. So square. You have no idea what's happening with it. And so it there's just something about it that just like I really like it. Now there is also a like science museum IMAX version of this that's 45 minutes long, or 47 minutes long, and it has more of the 70 millimeter in it, and less of everything else, of course, because you know this is 2 hours. So that would be neat to see that, to see it in like, you know, real like science museum dome IMAX.
Yeah,
like,
that would be pretty cool.
That would be cool. So I don't know if that we'll have a chance to do that, but I would like to do that. So how do we feel about stars?
I think this one's going to be difficult for me to actually rate, because I want to give it 5 stars, but I can't, because I know, like, as a portion of a story, it still lacks a few things to get 5 stars. But for what it's trying to do, it ultimately succeeds and then some.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm having to kind of debate on whether or not I think it's important for what it is, or good at being a story that it's trying to tell that we've already seen before. And so I want to give it a 4-star just as a bare minimum. Like, it's way better than anything 3 or lower. Like, no, it's good. But as something to be entertaining, it's not quite there. But to be something historically important because of what it's done and what it's found, then that would be the 5.
I mean, I think that it's really well put together. And I really enjoyed it. And like, you know, I get nervous, like I almost cry, like I get like all of this emotional reaction to it. But like, just the stuff does that to me. You know, if I hear any recording of any radio transmission from any space shuttle mission of the entire run of that, anytime someone says you're go at throttle up, no matter what context I'm in, if I hear it like in the like the radio transmission, like I have to fight really hard not to like break down and cry. And I wasn't even alive when Challenger exploded, but just like everything about like space matters so much to me. So just like seeing anything space, you know, have like sitting there watching them try to make the landing, just sitting there seeing like the like any part of it means so much. But that has nothing to do with the movie. That's just, you know, seeing any of it in any context, because it's actual footage of actual space program stuff, is going to do that to me. So it's really hard for me to judge like how much is the this particular construction of the material responsible for that.
Yeah.
And I mean, because there are things here that I've never seen before, and things constructed in such a way that I haven't seen them presented before, that single shot that I've never seen of the descent to the surface, and you know, like stuff all over the place that is just like I've never seen it that way, or I've never like there are things like that like that's a decision that they made. We're going to use this by itself, and we're going to like put the music just this way, and we're going to do it for the entire time in real time. Like, that is a decision of this movie, but it's hard to say. I don't know. I guess it's not fair to not be fair to it, because I think like as a documentary and as like a representation of the historical events and as a document, and that they did go and dig this stuff out and have it, you know, high resolution scanned and preserved so that we have it, you know, for sure now. Which, if you know, there are 2 reels of it, and there's extra stuff in the IMAX one, and like that means there's stuff that we still haven't seen, in the movie, but now is like exists in a preserved way that, you know, it's not just sitting in a box in the archives without anybody knowing about it. Like now it can be seen and used by other people. And so I guess just as a project, it has some extra historical importance itself that it adds to the historical importance of the actual things that it's documenting. I don't know. There are some things that I think because it's presented in such a way that they don't explain stuff, that if you don't already know a bunch about what's going on the way we do, that you might not know what's going on sometimes. But I don't know if that's necessarily negative either. It's tough. Like, it is tough to judge.
Yeah.
I don't have any like problems I can specify though. So, which isn't, you know, of course not the way we don't like start at a 5 and then start chipping away. Like that's not the way that we measure, but I don't know. Like, I'm really glad it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And that we did finally get to see it.
And I got that one scene of the rocket actually launching super close.
Yeah.
Like, that's my personal highlight. So, like, while I know that everything NASA is more important to you than it is to me.
Yeah.
Like, there are, like, these tidbits, which I think are a mixture of here's something really cool and here's something that's important. And then understanding the importance of everything that happened, but trying to distinguish between here's something that's meant to be entertaining and then here is something that's meant to be important. And it is very difficult to distinguish because, like, yeah, it's hard for me to say this is bad or this is good as much as it feels like there is just something missing that I can't put my finger on.
I don't know. I didn't really feel that way necessarily, but I guess like I can understand maybe what you mean, because like there's not, you know, the story is, you know, what happened, I guess. And of course, there's much more to the story than is here. You know, that's why we have, why we need things like From the Earth to the Moon and The Dish and Hidden Figures and we need these other things because there are it's such a large scale thing that has so many parts to it and so many people involved, and that there's more than you can put in a single 2 hours from any particular perspective. And it's like there is sort of this reconstruction you have to do. Like you have to watch the right stuff, and you have to watch From the Earth to the Moon, and you have to watch The Dish, and you have to watch Hidden Figures, and you have to watch, I guess, maybe this now is a really good representation of the things that it does show in a way that you don't really have access to in other things. You know, maybe watch For All Mankind or When We Went to the Moon, or, you know, all the various History Channel and Discovery Channel documentary series from, you know, the various anniversaries and various times and whatever, you know, dozens of things must have been made over the last year because of this anniversary, that, you know, there's much, much content to consume about it. But I don't know, I guess in absence of particular problems, which I didn't have, and, you know, being, you know, completely attention holding for me, although that's just like anything space, you know, just that, like just the camera with it, just like bobbing there, like that could be like 5 more minutes probably. And it would still be interesting just because it's like, hey, look, the like capsule is right there. Let me kind of look at this for a minute. Hey, look, you can see like part of the NASA complex over there in the back. You know, it's just like it's not the, can't see the VAB though. I know this. It's like Will Smith in a movie for Kinney. It's just like, is there NASA in a movie? And it's not like bogative like Apollo 18. You know, like probably I'm gonna be okay with it. You know, we haven't watched First Man yet, so I don't know. Maybe they can screw it up somehow. But I'm going to give it 5, I guess.
All right.
Because I don't have an argument for giving it less. I don't have an argument for giving it 5 either, I guess. But it just seems like probably it's fine. So we had to say about Apollo 11. The documentary, probably not the space mission, as I'm sure
we'll... Oh yeah, we'll have way more to say about that. And if you want to hear what we have to say, you can subscribe to the channel, sign up for the podcast links so you can get them whenever they come out. Follow us on Twitter. And stay tuned for future episodes and events.
Yeah.
Coming events.
See you next time.
Later.
Okay, so what?
Okay, so have you seen the new trailer for A Quiet Place 2?
No, I know that it's happening, but I haven't.
It's happening. That's the second time I got to say it in this episode. All right. Okay.
Not that John Stewart.
All right. So anyone who's been listening to us frequently enough has some slight understanding that I want to enjoy A Quiet Place more than I do, because I have very specific and important issues with the movie. But alas, if you follow us on Twitter, links in the description. I made on Black Friday, I had posted a comment about I bought A Quiet Place on 4K Blu-ray. Hopefully, because maybe there's some special features or some deleted scenes or something that might help remedy a problem I have with it. But now that there's the trailer release for A Quiet Place 2, which comes out in March. And so I was going to ask you if you wanted to do A Quiet Place 2 for March Monster Madness.
I mean, I guess it counts, and like we would need to do it eventually anyway, because now it's a series that we'd have an entry for.
All right. Now, part of me is, if you have watched the trailer, then this will come of no surprise. If you have not, it's like 3 minutes long. You can go watch it on YouTube or something.
Seems too long.
It does. Now, the trailer does start off with like before all of the events happen. And then it shows like people like running around the streets and all this kind of stuff happening. And then after about a minute of this, it kind of picks up after the first movie. So we are still with the same family. We have the same daughter, the same son, and we have like the newborn inside of a box. So it does kind of feel like Death Stranding, only without ghost people things. And then we get like an introduction to a new character. But from what we've seen of this, it does look like it's going to be more world building of a movie compared to a survivalist in a movie, which does kind of interest me a little bit, because that was a problem I had with the first one, was the construction of the world, because not enough made sense. Mm-hmm. And this might give us an outing to it where it's like, OK, well, this is what happened and this is why, blah, blah, blah. So I'm less angry at it now.
2 minutes 38. It's too long.
Yeah.
It's too long for a trailer.
There was something else that was supposed to come out, I think, at the end of the year.
The thing that's weird about A Quiet Place 2 is that they were going to make it anyway. Like, they were going to make it without John Krasinski. They were just like, we're going to make A Quiet Place 2. And he was like, and then he didn't want to do it because he didn't have like an idea for it. He didn't see what the point was going to be. And so then like he came up, then he did come up with an idea and decided to actually do it. They were going to do it with, like, he wrote and directed the first one. Like, it's his universe. And they were going to try to do it without him, which seems odd. I mean, that happens sometimes with, you know, sequels to things. But, you know, sometimes people don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And they just don't even care anymore. And so that, you know, then we have 4 Jaws movies that Spielberg doesn't acknowledge existing. And so it's just like, sometimes it doesn't matter. But,
well, I mean, like, sometimes I think it's a good thing and sometimes I think it's a bad thing, where it's like, with Jaws, it was a bad thing, but with Aliens, it ended up being a good thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
well,
I guess it's like
not really a good thing anymore, because now he's
anymore.
I'm going to keep doing it, but
someone
screw it up.
Take it away from him. Jesus. No, I can understand that if he didn't want to be involved, then it's something that it's like, okay, well, you made one, you kind of relinquish it. Somebody else picks it up. And then if the second one turns out to be absolute garbage, then at least you have your name only attached to the first one. And then you can stand by that. And then you can kind of be like, well, I didn't want to be involved with it. I knew they were going to botch it. That's why I'm going to stick with what I made compared to what they tried to make on their own. But I almost feel like he does care. And that's the only reason why why he's involved, because if they say, hey, we want a second one, even if you don't want to make it, like, at this point, it should be more like a call to a challenge. You know, it's just like, OK, well, this is something I've made, and now I feel like I have the opportunity to advance or create or better something that I've already done in a way that maybe I feel like I failed in the first one. Like her stepping on a nail, or the husband leaving his almost to be birthed child. Little stuff like that. It's like, okay, well, I will redeem myself for the failures I feel I have made, blah, 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 blah. But, like, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to have a more direct opinion without him making an official statement or comment on the situation himself. Because if I don't know where he lies, it's hard for me to imply where he lies. I mean, unless they hand it to James Cameron and James Cameron's like, okay, I'll make A Quiet Place too. And then I'll be like, all right, let's do this. All right.
Oh yeah, that is something that I forgot to talk about the actual movie, is that I was like, it made me think of Michael Bay in like one particular moment, which is like probably like what? But there's a, like, you remember, I've talked about it like really commonly, it comes up a lot, the scene in the first Transformers when the whatever the like scorpion one is called is like attacking them the second time.
Yeah, Scorponok.
And the and they like they're trying to get air support, and there's like there's the like couple of shots inside the AWAC when they're trying to like find out what their location is. They're trying to deal with the situation, and they just like used like the actual AWAC and the actual crew and just like pushed the camera up and down the like aisle next to the consoles and just said like, this is what's happening on the ground. Just as if that was happening, just handle it how you would if this was happening, and just like captured this, like this really great, you know, like military thing. But there's a moment like that in this where they just like dolly a camera along the consoles in Mission Control while they're like all like where the flight director is asking the various departments if they're go, and it feels like that. And I thought, like, see, this is a real thing. Like, this is why it works when Michael Bay does it, because this is a thing that you can actually do. And they did it, you know, nobody ever saw it, but they did it way back then. And like, they were thinking that same way. It's like, that's another example right there of like, they were shooting this like a movie when there was no movie. And like, I really appreciated that moment, even as it made me think of Michael Bay.
We need like a little jingle or something for Michael Bay.
Well, I mean, we have the In Fairness to Michael Bay, but that's only about product placement. And so we don't actually talk about Michael Bay that much, I don't think.
No, we don't.
Not like we do some things.
All right. So here are a few things that I want to run by you to see if you want to try to do it based off of, like, you know, the stuff that we've already done, some of the stuff that we're going to do, and then anything that you might be interested in already. The remake of The Grudge.
The remake of The Grudge.
Yeah, it is. It's another American made remake.
Have we watched the American one at all?
I think we have, but do not quote me.
I can't remember. I know we watched the Japanese one, didn't we?
That I think we did.
But I don't remember if we watched the... I'll just check here and see. I don't have an episode for it, so I guess not. We did... No, we did American One Missed Call and Japanese One Missed Call. And we did Japanese The Grudge, I think. But we didn't do... I don't think we've done the American one. Or if we did, it's like the Longest Day episode that we didn't do, but like I thought
we thought
sure
we did.
We did.
Yeah. All right, because like the ones I'm looking at is the New Grudge. That one is more of a hit or miss for me. So if you want to do it, we can do it. Mostly because it's based off of something I already like, so I'm more for it than against. The next one is Underwater, which has Kristen Stewart in it. And it's supposed to be an underwater horror movie.
Yeah, I know Brittany wants to see that, so we'll probably end up seeing it anyway.
Like, I saw the trailer for it, and I thought it was very nice. Ah, come on, is Sonic the Hedgehog?
Oh,
we are going to watch Sonic the Hedgehog.
Well, we usually do video game movies, and then we didn't do the World of Warcraft movie or the Assassin's Creed movie.
We'll probably get around to those, but the thing that gets me is I was part of the group of people who hated the original design for Sonic the Hedgehog so much.
Oh yeah, it didn't bother me that much.
But. And like the whole studio kind of thing, they backtracked, they spent all of this money to fix it. They turned Dr. Robotnik red like he should have been. Like they pretty much said, guys, we're sorry we messed up. Here you go. And then we all looked at it and it was beautiful. And now I feel like I am not only obligated to watch it because I complain, but now I want to watch it because it does look like it's something I'm going to enjoy, partially because of nostalgia and partially just because it's Jim Carrey looking like he's going to play a Jim Carrey character again. And that does kind of excite me. So if I have to kidnap the entire family to drag them to the theater, go watch this movie, I will do it.
No, I think we'll probably see it.
What about The Invisible Man? I kind of thought that this was going to be one of those like dark universe movies, but now it doesn't really look like it's supposed to be, even though The Invisible Man was supposed to be a universal monster movie kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not 100% sure.
Is there even a dark universe anymore, or did they give it up?
I don't know. Like, it's so long in between movies that they've ever made that I'm not sure if it's something they're trying to stick with or not.
I don't know. Maybe it's Blumhouse.
Blumhouse seems to do pretty good. So there you go, folks. If you have any suggestions for us, leave them in the comments down below. I take care of the comments myself personally.
Oh, we need to see it. Because it has Aldous Hodge in it. Who is Hardison. From Leverage, The Invisible Man. So, like, we should see it because he's in it, and we like him.
One second, I'm done with names. Hey, that's the tech guy.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'm for it.
I'm for it.
I don't know. Like, I'm on IMDb and I'm looking at this stuff, and it's like the New Mutants. I kind of want to see that one, but that's part of the whole. X-Men kind of thing, Black Widow, which we won't do on the show for like a while. Mm-hmm. Wonder Woman 84,
which we will do.
Do you want to do Ghostbusters Afterlife? I haven't even seen the trailer for that yet, but
I haven't seen the trailer for it yet either. I mean, I don't know.
People seem to be in high regards of it ish.
We did the last new Ghostbusters. But we haven't done the original ones.
Ooh, we got to do Bill and Ted.
Can we do it by itself, though?
I mean, we don't have to.
I guess it could be like we do, like we did, like the first John Wick, even though it was like 2 years old, and then like the next week we did two. Like we could do that, I guess. We could like watch the other Bill and Ted movies, and then like right away watch the new one. Which we do have a thing that we're planning to do sometime pretty soon, where we're going to watch both, like the original and remake RoboCop movies, like back to back.
Yeah,
and talk about that. So, because I haven't seen the new one still, because people said that it wasn't very good, and so I didn't bother. But
and I thought it was okay.
Well,
matter of fact, I think I almost liked it more than the original, which I know is hard to believe, but. I remember leaving the theater going, wow, they did a better job explaining these points X than the original did. I wonder if that's just because of X focus on X stuff.
I mean, I think maybe people liked it better than they liked a new Total Recall. Which I didn't bother to see either.
That one, I'll say that one wasn't very good. It wasn't fun. Like that, I think like Total Recall was fun, and the new Total Recall movie was not fun.
Hmm.
Yeah, it just was like, hey, you want like a spy action-y kind of propaganda movie with stuff in it that's going to make you question stuff? Well, here you go. It's not any fun. There are no midgets or women with three tits or crazy body horror dude or aliens on Mars. There's like none of the fun stuff.
No Arnold.
Yeah.
I guess Arnold is not always fun, but
I mean that wasn't even a picture of him on the wall.
Often he's fun.
Wish to speak to management. My phone number is underneath. I run this facility.
I'm trying to think. Is there? Well, I guess isn't that what is it called? The movie where he's like a sheriff in Mexico.
Yeah.
Like, that's not fun.
No,
right?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't in Mexico. I think it was in Arizona.
Oh,
and it was this these Mexican like drug dudes who were like racing across the border in like these high fancy cars and terrorizing a town.
Yeah.
And he becomes the sheriff of that town. And then he's got to like save everybody. And that one was pretty fun.
Oh, was it fun?
Yeah, it was, because it has like Johnny Knoxville and he's got to do like crazy, almost Jackass level stuff. But he never gets hurt.
That's what he knows how to do.
So. Yeah, it's like, here's like a situation that looks like it would be in Jackass, but no one really gets hurt by it. It's just kind of entertaining because it's like it's the clumsy sidekick. He was the clumsy sidekick. That's the best way to put it. Old Batman and young Robin that isn't an angsty teenager. Minus the acrobatics.
Last Stand, it's called, I think.
That sounds about right.
Okay, I wasn't sure whether it was fun or if it was like Gran Torino with Arnold.
No.
In Mexico or Arizona.
I think if you were to cut out that like the last like the big hoorah scene, then it probably would have been more like Gran Torino. Cuz like Gran Torino is very solemn.
Yeah.
And this is kind of solemn until like the finale where it's just like everything's got to turn out okay. You know, Arnold doesn't die and leave as like, oh, well, here you go, Johnny Knoxville, you're the new sheriff. It's not like.
He actually kind of looks like Clint Eastwood in like one of
the poster.
Well, not the poster, but in like the still that's for this trailer video, because he's like, you know, his hair is kind of like short, but it kind of like sticks up in like a particular way. And he's like squinty and old looking. And so he's kind of even looks like Clint Eastwood. This person says, for me, The Last Stand is a bit of a throwback to his 80s movies, but with much better effects. Overall, quite fun. Movies, unfortunately, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. we should do another Brosnan movie pretty soon. It's been a little while. I've got a couple more on the Pierce Brosnan shelf that we haven't done yet. One of them is supposed to be good. So it's like he was like nominated for a Golden Globe for his acting in The Matador.
Nice.
Like, that's one of them. So like you can take a, I mean, you don't get a Golden Globe nomination for Maybe You Shouldn't Be Living Here. So there's something different in this one, perhaps.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Science has proved that this is so.